All right, Matt, the only way we're going to get out of this mansion is if we solve old man Stauf's stupid puzzles. And it looks like there's another one over here on the stovetop.
All right, let's see what we got here.
All right. Okay. What is this, a word puzzle? What is this? It looks... Okay, it's like it looks like it's kind of like a crossword, but the letters maybe are settings on the oven itself, or I don't know.
Yeah, I've been having trouble this whole time. You know this, and I can't make heads or tails of this.
I know.
Out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Okay, well, that's old man Stauf himself, always always there to give us grief about the thing we just started trying to solve.
This puzzle will whet your appetite.
Oh, my God.
It's
okay.
Okay.
It looks like... Okay,
you might
okay.
need to use your brain pans for this one.
Brain pans.
Dude, we get it. We know what we have to do. We're just... Give us a moment so that we can concentrate.
Yeah, if we had more than 1 second to think, maybe we could...
If you can't solve this puzzle, you're on the chopping block.
My God. Was he like auditioning to be like a game show host when he was alive? Like, what is this fucking dude's deal?
Do you have nothing else better to do than haunt us and write bad jokes? What are you talking
about?
This
puzzle will test your skillets.
Ugh.
Fuck you. Hey, ghost, why don't you suck a ghost dick, huh? Why don't you go do it?
Yeah. Why don't you eat a ghost gun, you bitch?
Oh, shit.
Saute or not saute? That is the question.
Part of me wants to see when he starts looping, because I feel like he's going to come around to the first one at some point, right?
I don't know. These have all been structurally similar, but different enough that I think there's hundreds.
Knife to meet your acquaintance. Meat is spelled M-E-A-T.
Fuck you, dude. You know what? He also sounds suspiciously like Nick.
Doxed, I guess, again. Thanks for coming to my mansion. I just like, you know, said I always wanted you guys to hang out, and it seems like this sort of puzzle, you know, escape room scenario was the best method to actually make this happen, so...
I don't understand how the contracts work at our job, because Nick has a mansion and I have a garage.
That's what I'm tacoing about.
What? We painfully ponder plentiful puzzles and watch violently vicious full motion video in 1993 PC CD-ROM classic, The Seventh Guest. This week on How Did This Get Slayed?
It's How Did This Get Slayed, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and where is everybody? Est, scream it like in that episode of The Twilight Zone, horror video games of all time. That third W is by @GriffinKelly003. Submit yours @KetPlayedPod, #WWW. I'm Nick. Jeff Goldblum is the fly girl, along with my co-host.
I'm shithell rotting filth bell. With my guest, or no, I'm sorry, with my fellow host.
Matt Appa Hunt Ya. Hello, everyone.
Hello,
I'm gonna hunt you.
Everyone. And welcome back, Bucket. But
Ed.
Scary.
Oh, yeah. Should have waited for that. Also, I thought we were doing hell, everyone, again.
Oh,
shit. Oh, we are. You know, this is... What week is this? Two?
This is...
Yeah.
You guys have gotten real lazy about this since I've been on your podcast last time.
Let's do it all again. Let's start over. We have a very, very exciting guest and a very... I'm very interested to hear everyone's perspectives on this game because this was a game that made a huge impact at the time and a game that I played as a youth and a game that I believe our engineer Devin also played a bit. So I'd like to hear his takes on it when we get to it. But before we do that, before we descend into gaming hell with this week's spooky, scary game for how this gets slayed, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're enjoying by spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven, and I reserve the first 10 seconds.
Okay.
I want 10 seconds of the 70.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Begin.
10 seconds on Portal 2. I finished it. I loved it. It's a more complete overall game than Portal 1, but Portal 1 has higher highs, and it's too bad that Portal 3 will never happen. 10 out of 10. Let's go down to Heather Ann Campbell.
Perfect.
All right. I set up my Valve Index, and I got to go into VR for the first time in a long time, and certainly a better VR experience than PlayStation VR. It is so good that it made me sad. First thing I did was I did Google Earth and I flew to my favorite bar in Paris, which was closed, which also means it will always be closed. I'll just look at it and it will always be closed.
Oh, no.
And then I did an app where I got to go to the national parks and it's photorealistic and I wanted to start crying. Like, I don't know what the intended... It's amazing. And and I booted up the thing, the sword. And how did this get played? Fans have told me to... what games to get for this gaming PC. And yes. I've been trying to get them and I got Sword and Sorcery or Blade and Magic or I don't know. It's a VR experience. And the only thing I've seen is that it starts with you looking in the mirror and there's a sword on your back. And I was like, no way.
Time's
no
up.
Way. And I reached behind me and grabbed my sword and unsheathed it. And I just went, yes!
Wow.
That's as far as I got in the game.
It's like exactly what you wanted.
So I didn't even fight anyone. Oh, and I took the dagger and I threw it in the air and caught it with my other hand.
Fuck.
It's fucking great.
Game's rock.
I would have cut myself.
Is that time?
Hey, yeah, it's time. It's time, all right, to introduce our guest. Very, very excited to have them back.
Hello.
Writer, producer from Succession and Preacher and Monsterland, now streaming on Hulu. Mary Laws is with us. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
Should I tell them my scary name, too?
Yes, sure. Please.
My scary name is Mary Laws Boo.
Very good. I thought you were going to go Scary Claws, but that's a punch-up.
I liked it, but in the rewrite, I rewrote it back to Mary Laws Boo.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
Are you someone, we're here in October, this episode is releasing in October, the spookiest of months. Are you someone who's into spooky scaries?
Yeah, I like spooky scaries. Does that mean just general scary stuff?
Yeah, or are you like Heather, are you like unflappable but when it comes to horror?
She's got a Texas Chainsaw Massacre poster behind her.
Yeah,
oh, I didn't see that
on Zoom.
Look at that. It was partly cropped out. Look at that.
Yeah,
thing.
I had to come up with a name for my my company when I started producing, and I called it Story by Leatherface because I thought it was pretty funny. Yeah, so I like the spooky scaries a lot. I don't know if I don't know if I would call myself unflappable. There are certain things that don't really bother me, like I don't know, jump scares and stuff like that doesn't really bother me. Blood and gore doesn't really bother me. So yeah, I would say unflappable, basically.
Wow.
How are you in a situation like a Halloween Horror Nights or something like where their intent is to scare you?
I'm probably like the least fun person there and the most fun. So both. I like to ride a large spectrum. No, I'll be sort of like, oh, that wasn't scary. That wasn't scary. I really like the haunted hayride in LA.
Oh, wow.
But I find it, you know, it's like pretty, it's like kind of cheap and trashy, which is also, you know, a brand of horror that I love. So I'll be like, oh, this isn't scary. But then like, there'll be like the guy who like runs around with the chainsaw in like the parking lot like before you get on the ride, and I like to chase like him around, So it's like, who's chasing who?
I'm not chasing so, you.
Yeah, I'm fun in that kind of, in that way, but...
So I know that when we, you know, when we covered Night Trap on the show, Heather had said that you got very into Night Trap, and yeah. And I know that Heather is, you know, like the big gamer in the household. But is there a do horror games work for you? Have you ever had a horror game that really connects with you?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Night Trap. I like the games Heather's played on the show that have like I'm not a gamer. I don't know what you call it. Live capture? Is that like a thing? No, that's not the right thing. What am I trying to say?
Right?
Yeah,
like
video
full
stuff.
Motion video.
Got it.
It's just like a brand of game that I've like never, like, I don't know. It's not like really, Heather, like what you generally will just like play for fun. And it's not a kind of game that I've ever really played before. So I think they're really fun. What was the one you were playing a while back, Heather, that I really liked?
Her Story.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I liked that one a lot. I got really into Her Story. Yeah, it was pretty rad.
Mary also played PT when we were playing that last Cogember.
Right. Yes.
And she did not like it. She was upset that I made her play it and what did not want. She was like, I don't want this. I don't like this. I don't want to do this.
PT? I've blacked it out of my memory.
PT was the one where you're in a hallway and all you have to do is like walk around.
Oh, no, no. I didn't like that one. No. Too scary. Yeah. I mean, but brilliant. I thought about it actually when I was playing this game because of the maze in this game. And like PT just is like so much just like walking down, you know, like a hallway, and how terrifying it is to kind of just like not know what is at the end of the hallway. And I definitely, not to just jump in, but I cheated on the maze, like for sure. I tried it so many times, and then I was finally like, must cheat. And even while cheating, it was very, very hard to like to complete the maze. But I was reading like some, you know, some like reviews on the cheats or like some comments on the cheats, and people were like, yeah, this scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. And I could only imagine being a kid, like not knowing what's going to jump out of a corridor, but you know, nothing jumped out. So PT, I think, is scary.
Hey guys, hey boys,
yes.
What were the scariest things that you saw? What were the scares in movies that scared you as a child?
I have an answer, and it's great. It's pathetic.
Oh.
But when I was 8 years old, I saw a Twilight. There was like a Twilight Zone marathon. I was at my grandparents' house, and they were like, it was, you know, so they were just, I was watching a bunch of Twilight Zone episodes, and you know, the To Serve Man episode.
Yeah.
Where it's like these aliens come to Earth, and this was parodied on The Simpsons. People probably know the parody more than the actual source at this point. These aliens come to Earth, and they have this book, To Serve Man, and everyone boards their vessels to return to the alien planet. And then they find out at the end, the twist is To Serve Man. It's a cookbook. And that scared me so much that I like couldn't sleep. My grandparents had a pool, and like it was like too late, but I was just like, I just have to do something else. So I like went and just sat in the pool by myself alone at night just to try to shake this horrific image out of my head, and it didn't work. Yeah, so that was it.
You were imagining what it would be like to boil alive.
Oh, I didn't make
pool.
That connection. Yeah.
Immersion therapy.
Right. Yeah, I found that concept so scary of being eaten by an alien.
I feel
Matt,
like
you got an
should,
answer?
Yeah, Apodaca and Mary, I feel like we should all answer this fun question.
For me, I mean, I guess I just knew I was never trying to watch anything I wasn't supposed to watch. So if like any adult told me that it was too scary, I was like, okay, well, you know better than me. Thank you for the heads up. I would never want to be scared. But I remember being interested because of the phenomenon surrounding the Blair Witch Project. I remember being interested in finding out what that was, but like my mom wouldn't tell me. She was just like she just wouldn't tell me about the movie. And I asked my aunt, and she told me like beat for beat like what the movie was, and then she told me that it was real, and I started to cry.
Wait, who was it? Your grandpa? Was it? Did you say your grandma?
Oh, no, your aunt. But my grandma took my mom to see The Exorcist when she was six. Like,
hell wow.
So I think there's just like a weird horror thing in my house. I like horror movies now. Like, I'll watch them now, and like my mom also likes watching them now. But for a long, my mom won't own a copy of The Exorcist. She won't do it. Like, there's just like, I've never seen it. I think because it was not a movie that was shared, in my family. But we like scary stuff now. But then she was like, absolutely not. No, I'll never let you watch a scary anything.
When your aunt told you it was real, was she lying, or did you? Because a lot of people at the time thought that it was marketed as it was real.
I'm guessing, you know, I don't think she's funny enough to prank me like that. So I'm pretty sure she probably
marketing
just
works on your aunt.
they got her. They really tricked her. She might still think it's real.
I think I've told this story on the podcast before, that I saw Blair Witch here in Los Angeles. I was here for the summer, and it was showing in one theater sort of near Santa Monica pre-release, and it was billed as a documentary. Mm-hmm. And I walked out of the theater afterwards and was like, what? I mean,
what world is this?
Like, my friend Josh and I are just kind of like, so are ghosts real? Like, more confused than, and just like, how, I mean, what else, what was that?
Yeah, the ethics of making that movie too. Like, can they do that? Like, did they tell the police?
They did a similar marketing thing with Paranormal Activity, right? The first one.
Yeah.
Because I remember going to see that one and having a very similar experience and like standing in the line like all around the block and then going in. And I can't remember. I don't think they said it was real, but I think it was like weird stuff happened on set while they were filming it, and some of it was like caught. I don't remember, but it was a similar marketing tactic, and it worked on me as well.
My brother worked at the same company at that guy when he had a day job. And so it was just a thing. It was I don't know the guy's name. It's like, yeah, Phil's making a movie. Oh, how about that? Good luck, Phil. You know, he's just like kind of like doing this thing. And it's like, it's fucking Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Massive franchise.
I like unabashedly like love every single one of those movies. I love them. They're like my favorite. They're so fun.
They're so, so good. And it was also like, I don't know. I think Blair Witch like started this thing of sort of like indie horror, you know, a new wave of indie horror.
Right.
And Paranormal Activity was like a part of that. And I think that's, I don't know. I think that was such an exciting time for horror. I was I was never really scared of horror movies. I was scared of like more real life stuff. There were a couple of real life, like there were movies that were the fear was like based in sort of reality that I wouldn't watch. Like I wouldn't watch Tuck Everlasting. Did you guys know that? That movie and that book?
Yeah, I've seen the movie. I remember the book.
Is that about the guy who invents the car?
No, that's Tucker, A Man in His Dream.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, different one. No, this one is, Heather and I think have very opposite fears about this, but my fear, it scared me so much when I was a little kid that you could accidentally like drink from a stream, which is what happens in the book. He like accidentally drinks, the whole family accidentally drinks from the stream, and then they just live forever. And when I was really, really young, I was like, that is the scariest thing that I can possibly imagine having to exist in this cruel, cruel world forever. Whereas I think Heather would be quite happy to live forever and ever. You want to get frozen.
I would love to get frozen. My that's not a joke.
No, I know.
Not
that's
a joke
why
at all.
Laughing. Yeah,
not a joke.
We're laughing.
The other day I told her I was I'll get frozen with you, honey. We could get frozen together. And it was the happiest I've seen you look in a really long time.
I mean, that's what we call character consistency. That even you can predict the conversations that Mary and I have in our house. By listening to the podcast and being like, is that something that a robot would want? Yep. Okay, great. Wait, I want to tell this scare. So when I was a kid, my parents, I think I've told that my kindergarten showed us horror movies, right? I think yes. I've said that on there. Okay, yes. Great. So I had a really early exposure to horror movies. And then my mom and dad wanted to show me Predator when I was like 7 or 8 or something. And what they wanted to do was pause it over and over again and show me how it was made. Because they were like, movies aren't scary. They're like a big theater experience. So all we'll pause when the scary stuff happens and show you how they did it. And I was like, okay. And we made it a third, two thirds through Predator. And I was like, not scared, totally fine. Then my evil grandmother came home and she was staying with us at the time. And she came in and was like, you're showing her this movie? And I was like, I'm not scared. And my mom and dad were like, yeah, but we're showing her how it works. And she's like, what? I mean, sure, that works for now. But what is she going to do when she starts thinking that it could happen? And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, because she'll watch this and she'll know at some point that this could happen to her or it could happen in the real world. And
I don't think she understood the lesson.
my fear went from 0% to 100% in like 2 sentences. Because I went from, they're showing me the makeup on the Predator and showing me like where the costume is by pausing this VHS to, wait, is this movie a warning? Is this a thing that might happen to me? And then I was scared for a week.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Man. The headline to this for me is that Heather's grandma thought Predator was real.
Yeah. I think Heather's grandmother was projecting herself into the Predator.
Not a great woman. Not a great person. What if I hunted you?
When I hunt you.
I do have one more question for Mary before we get into this week's game, which is that in the time since we last recorded with you, Matt and I have both been inside Heather's gamer garage, call it. Which I'm like, this is the coolest place I've ever been.
So cool. But
yeah, are you regularly in there? You just kind of like, no, she goes in there and does her own thing. What is your relationship to this section of the house?
To her garage? Well, I mean, it's her space and she can do whatever she wants in it, but we have a lot of fun, I think, in the garage. I think sometimes when you're working, I'll come and sit on the couch and do work in there with you. And then we really like to watch movies, and it was a great sort of fun space for us during major lockdown, because we went in there a lot, and she's got a really great big screen television with really cool lighting system. You can probably explain more what the lighting system is, Heather.
My Hue lights are synchronized to my television, so when you're watching, say, Terminator 2, mm-hmm. and Sarah Connor is hit by a wall of fire, the room turns orange.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. And so we started doing these, like, Friday night when we couldn't, like, go to the movies, because Heather really, really loves going to the movies, and that was something we did together a lot. And so we started having our own movie nights in Heather's garage, and we would get, spicy chicken sandwiches and sit and watch a movie that was like sort of on. We have an ongoing list of like movies we love that the other person hasn't seen. So we watched lot of great movies in there. We watched Fish Tank, which is a movie I love, that Andrew Arnold movie. We watched some really great Bong Joon-ho in there over lockdown. These are like some of my favorite lockdown memories, actually. We watched Alien.
Mary had never seen Alien.
Wow.
I had never, embarrassingly, never seen Alien or Blade Runner. We watched Blade Runner recently. Mm-hmm. So, it's such a fun space.
And we also play Wii Jeopardy.
We really like, this is where our gaming interests collide. Yeah, Wii Jeopardy. Which I think, I can't wait for your mom to visit, because I think she's going to kick both of our asses in Wii Jeopardy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Why the Wii release?
Well, we did research. And so the way this started is that, you know, I have that EverDrive from my N64. And it's loaded with all the N64 games ever made. And we were scrolling through and like a bunch of games that we'd played when we were a kid. And we played like Snowboarding Kids and
I love Zelda Snowboard Kids.
And one of the games was Jeopardy. And it was like, I wonder if this is any fun, just like a board game. And we played that, and we played it so much that we started looping questions. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, what release? Because the most modern releases of Jeopardy give you multiple choices for the answers. And that doesn't work.
No.
Like the only way that Jeopardy.
We want to test each other's actual knowledge. So it's a more fair fight.
So Wii Jeopardy was the last time that you were allowed to input the text for your answer. And the Wii remote made it easy because you pointed the letters on the screen.
I streamed some. It was actually a very fun Twitch game when I was doing more streaming. I streamed the Game Boy Advance Family Feud, and I did some of the PlayStation 4 Family Feud as well. But the Game Boy Advance one is fun because it'll be questions like we asked 100 women who's their ideal husband, and then since this game came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, the answers are like, Mel Gibson, number one answer. Well, let's go back even further into the 90s. Into this week's game, The Seventh Guest.
The Seventh Guest is a 1993 haunted house simulator. If haunted houses were designed by IBM and voiced by the creepiest guy in line at the pharmacy. Other games.
Some editorializing, but okay.
No, that's from Wikipedia. That's directly from Wikipedia.
It's on the box.
Other games that were released in 1993 include Doom, Myst, Star Fox, Mortal Kombat 2, and Nick Weiger's favorite, Day of the Tentacle.
Oh, right? Yeah. We covered DOTT on this, love that on this game. Pod. Just, a lot of fun.
You sucked on that tentacle. Too much? Too much.
Christ.
Too much. Too much. It was produced by Trilobite and originally released by Virgin Interactive Entertainment in April 1983. It's one of the first computer video games to be released only on CD-ROM. Most games previous to this were released as diskettes that you would then change in and out, in and out, in and out. And this was a major development for PC games. And it was released for DOS, CDI, Mac OS, Windows, iOS, OS X, and Linux. Bill Gates called The Seventh Guest the new standard in interactive entertainment. This was the CD-ROM game that sold CD-ROM drives to people back in the day, because previous to this, games were not interactive films. And today, my first bit of editorializing is that it plays like a game where you're supposed to be blown away by moving down a hallway slowly. And it's a puzzle game. And the plot of the game is that you are a guest or you break into a mansion. I'm not quite clear. And you solve puzzles, which then reveal movie clips of a past event that happened in the mansion when a man named Stauff.
Yes.
Henry.
All right, look. The intro to this game doesn't need so many steps.
So much context. So much backstory.
I fucked up in the intro to the game. I was watching it and I was with it and I was like, oh, okay, this guy's having visions of dolls and he's gonna make them and somehow they're haunted or doing something bad to the kids. But then I accidentally pressed some button and skipped like a whole chunk and then suddenly was just in a house. So honestly, story-wise, I have no idea how I got there and what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you could have watched it in its entirety and be in the same mental state. It doesn't really clarify much.
Well, why don't I read the plot synopsis of that section that Mary missed from Wikipedia itself? The game begins with a flashback to 1935 in the town of Harley-on-the-Hudson. A drifter named Henry Stauff kills a woman to steal her purse, beginning a series of deplorable acts. He has a vision of a beautiful doll, and the next day begins carving it. Just, again, so he kills a woman for the purse.
Yes.
Sees a vision of the doll, starts carving the doll. He trades the doll for food, drink, and a place to stay at a local tavern. Stauff then has other visions of dolls and toys and crafts and sells these as well. Stauff becomes a successful toy maker. He uses his fortune to build a mansion at the edge of town following another vision. At the same time, several children possessing Stauff's toys contract a mysterious illness and die. Stauff disappears into his mansion and is never seen again.
Yeah, it's the drifter thing. And especially so this game is an FMV game and you know, Mary mentioned her fandom for this genre. And I have affinity for it, too. I think it's like even something like this, that's like this lo-fi, you know, very, very early 1.0 version of it. I still kind of just like the, you know, how janky the video looks and how specific it looks and sounds. But the acting in this is very, and the wardrobe is very, very broad. Mm-hmm. It's all like, it's like a community theater production where the only note the director gave was bigger. Like everyone's so like when the woman gets murdered by Stauff the Drifter, she's like, oh no, my purse. And it's like, ah! It's just like, this is how you're getting the table set for the game. Yeah, they went for it. It's, everything's played at 100.
I will say, if you were doing it, I would like it more, I think.
Yeah, no, that was maybe better than some of the actors in the game. It felt nostalgic in that way, though, because I was like, I did a lot of community theater growing up, and I was like, oh, I know these people. Like, they got paid a day or two salary to come in and do the seventh guest, and now they're immortalized in this game.
No, God bless them. I mean, I love it, and it kind of adds to the charm of the game. We should, you know, Heather, you touched on this, and I do want to get into the story, but and how this plays. But this is like, this game, along with Myst, which comes out the same year, was seismic for PC gaming. You know, the sales of CD-ROM drives in the wake of these games like increased like 300%. This was the equivalent of a system seller for a console, for a peripheral for a computer. People were buying CD-ROM drives just to play these games.
Which is funny also, because a lot of the early reviews for this game talk about the fact that you can have a top of the line PC and probably still have trouble playing Seventh Guest.
Right.
Like, because all the driver issues, because this was such new technology that playing the game itself was a bit of a feat.
Yes. And we had I played this game as a kid, and we had a single speed CD-ROM drive, which is like I think the PlayStation, even the PlayStation 1, I think, had a double speed CD-ROM drive. A single speed CD-ROM drive is so fucking slow. There's just so much spin up and so much loading to stream all of this this data. It allowed things like full motion video and speech and the you know, the Red Book audio, although I think this game actually uses MIDI, which were like so completely, from an audio visual standpoint, like just blew your mind versus everything else that you were playing on PC or consoles at the time.
It still kind of blows my mind.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't play a lot of games, but I feel like it's cool every time.
I would love to go back to, so I know, I understand that what we're witnessing is akin to like the first movie, you know, like it's like,
right,
wow, the train looks like it's going to hit me. And that's enough for the movie to be sold across the country. People are lining up because they're like, what if the train hits me? Or as my grandmother would have put it, when the train hits you. But so the novelty of the thing existing is the reason it was selling. But I want to play a clip of the actual acting in this game so that the audience who hasn't played Seventh Guest gets into the headspace of what it's like to interact with this game.
Old Man Stauff built a house and filled it with his toys. Six guests were invited one night. Their screams, the only noise. Blood inside the library, blood right up the hall, dripping down the attic stairs. Hey, guests, try not to fall. Nobody came out that night. Not one was ever seen. But old Mad Stealth is waiting there. Crazy, sick, and mean.
Love the delivery of Bean.
My first note I wrote on my notes while playing the game is, this is like hanging out with Matt and Nick for hours. It's a game where saying something with inflection is supposed to equal a joke.
I will say, Stauff is the presence who, the ghastly presence who you're trapped in this mansion, your soul is trapped in this mansion, or, you know, you're playing it all from the first person perspective. And figuring out your identity as you go by solving puzzles. And so Stauff himself is like this disembodied voice as you're doing this. And he is a pretty constant audio presence as you're trying to solve all these puzzles. Constant. And I did like some of his quips.
No!
this guy doesn't shut the fuck up. All he does is talk, yeah. This guy.
Yeah. But like, there's a bunch of chess puzzles. There's one with a bunch of knights. And he's like, don't take all night. You know, and then there's a puzzle with moving grates along, and he's like, I think you'll find this rather grating.
Yeah, but see, that's one to one. That's not really a joke.
That's like, what I like about it. That's the level I'm operating at.
Because in the canned one too, he goes, I don't think you can do this. And I was like, okay.
My favorite, and my favorite is not this. My favorite is actually was decently clever, but the dollhouse puzzle, which I think is maybe the last puzzle you solve before you see the ending. It's like a dollhouse, and you're trying to connect a bunch of turn on window lights so that you can ascend levels. They're all like little things like this. But his quip is, this puzzle's on the house.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
It holds up.
It's literally on the house.
I was listening to, before I got a chance to play it, Mary was playing it on the couch. And I was, I think, doing like reading a book or doing something else or prep, I don't know what I was doing. And all I heard over and over again was, God, what was it? It was like, I don't think that's the point of this puzzle. Right. Over and over and
I got,
over
I got
again.
Really, really, really stuck in the maze. And I think that seems to be like a common denominator with like people who play this game, is that the maze is just a piece of trash game to get a puzzle to get through. And I finally, I tried doing it because I understood that there was a map, right, in like an upper level house.
Yes,
or
on the
an upper level room, rather. And so like if you could, you know, figure out what all the turns were. So I tried to do that for a while, and I literally like went up there and I was like writing like left, right, left, right. And I couldn't do it. And I spent about 4 days playing this game, and I think I spent 2 days just like figuring out, not straight days, let's be real,
right.
but like multiple chunks of hours, like trying to do the maze. Cause I, after a while, it was so hard. I got like determined, oh, I'm going to, I'm going to crack this on my own. And then it was just like me and Stauf against each other. And it felt real.
Yes.
But then I finally today I was like, I want to get a little farther in the game before we record this. And so I found a cheat, but even the cheats were really hard to do.
Yes,
because I would
right.
watch like a walkthrough of someone else doing it. And I would write down, I wrote it on my notebook, like left, go forward, 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 left, right, and I still couldn't get it. It took me multiple times. It was the hardest puzzle, I think.
Mary just held up what looked like the Da Vinci Codex, like straight to camera, like it's some chart of like incomprehensible signs written in mirror language.
That puzzle sucks, and it's also kind of a microcosm of the frustrations of this game, because so it's sandwiched between there's a great puzzle. The grading one I mentioned, I didn't say it. I don't mean great, G-R-A-T-E. There's a grading puzzle. And then there is you have to go through the maze to get to a coffin puzzle. Mm-hmm. Both of those puzzles that bookend it are simple. They are so easy. They're easy little, you know, tile puzzles that you can just brute force your way through in 15 seconds.
I think I did the great puzzle. I ended up doing it like 30 times because
right.
I kept trying to do the maze, but then also I found some secret passage that kept sending me back to the grate. And I was just like, oh no, like I can't do this one again. But it was fun. That was a fun puzzle.
Yeah. So some puzzles are like, you know, pretty easy. Some puzzles are fun. Some puzzles are completely inscrutable. And I would not recommend attempting them without a guide. I absolutely cheated my way through the maze. And it's because I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. This sucks. And like you're saying, and you'll see this in the guides, it'll be things like here's the issue with the maze. Is that it's not like it's a grid-based movement. Nothing in this game is like grid-based. It's all like this pre-rendered animation that you'll see, like, you know, sending yourself down a hallway.
Right.
And so it's really hard to have a sense of where you are spatially, even with the map. Because you're like, well, I don't know how far I went forward. It's not like I went forward a single step. I went forward like down a whole hallway and then I turn right and that's just me turning in place. But then I turn left and that's me weaving my way down another hallway for some reason.
I realized in the maze puzzle after doing it for like the 100th time that there were vocal clues when you got to certain turns, and those ended up being really helpful. And every time I got to like a vocal clue, because Stauf would chime in and he would say something like, oh, you shouldn't go down that hallway. And I knew, oh, yes, fuck, I'm at the hallway that I should go down.
yeah. And then I'll hit you with a, you're doing amazing. Heather's so mad.
I fucking hated this game so fucking much. if you're at home and you haven't played this, the pleasure of the game is supposed to be that it is this environment you can explore, but it is akin to watching a Silicon Graphics demo of what a house is supposed to look like. So like, you're like,
sure.
Oh shit, I'm moving down a hallway at a snail's fucking pace. And that's supposed to blow my mind. Like, I'm Bill Gates in 1993 being like, holy shit, did you move down that hallway? It's not. And then the puzzles are bad. And I hate, and well, we know from this fucking show that I hate puzzles. I hate them. I fucking, it's the whole game is puzzles.
It's because you can't do them, honey. That's okay. I'll do it for you. I'll teach you how to cheat on the puzzles.
But also the reward for finishing a puzzle are these maddening little vignettes. And please, Matt, play the next vignette, which happens after you beat, I think, the cake puzzle, or maybe it's at the beginning of the cake puzzle.
I guess our host wants us to fend for ourselves.
Oh, I've tasted better fare.
At least he left his regrets.
I'll show you mine, if you show me yours.
I don't know.
It says that we're each to have a piece. Exactly the same, including the symbols. What? That's impossible!
So, that...
It was possible, though. It was pretty easy and very possible.
But So that's the counterweight to these puzzles and mazes and fucking environments is that you get these little scenes where somebody's like, I've never had a glass of wine before. And you're like,
right.
What is happening?
I think the concept of the game is really good, though. Like, I think if they updated the seventh guest to like a 2021 seventh guest, I'd be really into it because it checks a lot of boxes for me. I like puzzles and right. I like, what do you call it again? When they're real actors?
Full motion video. FMV.
Yeah. Full motion video. And I liked the doll, the like secret, you know, the souls of the doll, the children were going into the dolls. I don't know. I think right. like, imagine like a version where like there was a mashup of like Clue meets this video game meets that PT. Like it could be really scary and cool, I think.
Yeah, so there is a remaster on Steam, and that's what I played, but it's not at all a remaster. It's the original assets. It's not, you know, and honestly I think I read that it's actually just the version on Steam. Which is also a little buggy and janky, is just itself a port of the mobile version because this game got ported to iOS and Android earlier. So it's pretty bare bones. But like for instance, Myst, which also you know it was the other big game of this of the FMV you know early CD-ROM era, mm-hmm. I believe got a full remake. That's in that has that that it like it's it has smooth scrolling like it's just a first person game and like yeah a first person adventure version of this that also kind of like you know refines some of the jankier elements I think could actually be really fun. They did release a fan sequel. I think it's called The 13th Doll. It's a fan made sequel and I wonder how that would play. But
I have a confession about Myst.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Which is that when I worked at a video game store, people would come in. This was at the end of the CD-ROM era, I guess. But people would come in and they would ask for Myst because it was mm-hmm. so iconic that it didn't. You would just keep people just. It's like going into a video store and asking for Star Wars. Like,
right.
Oh, do you guys have Myst? And I would lie and say that we were out of stock. Because I didn't want anybody to play that game anymore.
Why? What?
Wow. You're like Jack Black in High Fidelity.
The CD-ROM game I played a lot when I was a kid was it was a Titanic game. Did anyone ever play game? That yes. game was lit. And I went home like not long ago and played it. We still had the CD-ROM and I was still able to play it with my brother. We used to spend hours playing that game and it was amazing. But we played Myst as well. CD-ROM games were amazing.
Titanic, an interactive journey. I believe that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. An interactive journey. Yeah. That was it.
There's also Titanic Adventure Out of Time.
Oh no, that one, that was it. That was it.
That one's the one.
And it was like you had to like save the Titanic from sinking and there was like a clock on it and you had to like know the right order to talk to people. It was so fun.
I remember liking because you know I remember enjoying this game and then getting frustrated with it and then eventually giving up on it. But it is definitely the kind of game that and I think part of why it was such a sensation is that it did, along with Myst, kind of appeal to people who maybe, you know, weren't going to play a Sonic the Hedgehog or a Street mm-hmm. Fighter, you know, or even like a PC, a PC game like Master of Orion or Day of the Tentacle of the era. You know, they were just like, but this looks like, oh, this looks like some, this looks very fancy and the gameplay is maybe not intuitive, but it's accessible enough for someone who maybe doesn't have hand-eye coordination and know the conventions of video games. This is like a dad game. My dad played this.
Did it scare you when you were a kid, Nick? Because when I was looking at again, like when I cheated, all of the sort of like comments were like, this used to scare the fuck out of me when I was a kid.
Yes.
And yeah.
I think I was a little too old to be scared by it, but I definitely, you know, I think I just wanted it to be hornier. There's points horny, where it hints that it's going to be horny, but it's like, and since it's so campy, you think it's maybe going to be a horny horror movie, but it never really gets there.
I felt there were like pedophilia undertones in the game.
So I
hope you didn't mean that kind of horny. I know you well, and I assume that you did not.
No. Certainly was not hoping there was more of that in the game.
I don't know. More of the little boy running away from all the adults who want to catch him.
Yes, yeah.
Was what you were talking about. I assume that's why Bill Gates liked it too soon. Oh!
I want to talk about the music in this game because it's not good and I don't like it.
How dare you?
And
strong disagree. Strong disagree.
Yeah. No.
Music's excellent.
I like it.
No.
I would listen to it like on background while I'm just like cooking.
What? Oh no. Oh no. Oh, I thought Mary and I were gonna spend our lives together.
We are listening to this music.
Yeah, Mary will agree to be frozen, but the soundtrack for this game has to play on a loop the whole time.
I liked it, and when it stopped, because sometimes I'm not sure if my game would glitch. My game often glitched, and I would have to.
It's very glitchy.
And Apodaca, I heard you like had a save issue when you were first starting or something like that.
I wish I had found your skip button, your magic skip button, because I got through a couple puzzles, hadn't saved, and I accidentally like exited out of the game and I couldn't skip the what felt like 15 minute long intro. I had to watch it again. I had seen it already, so I wish I could skip it. That was an absolute nightmare.
I was compulsively saving after I heard that. I like would go into another room and I would like immediately save because it kept glitching. But one of the main glitches was that the music would just suddenly like go out. And every time it went out, same. I was like, oh, bummer. I was really enjoying these tunes, these sweet tunes, Heather.
I want to hear what the track that Heather played, but I do want to note real quick while we're talking about saving that my experience playing this on Windows 10, it was so janky that I could not save. I had to rely on the auto saves because if I even opened the menu for this game in game, it would crash. So it's a pretty janky port. Just it's good that it's playable on modern hardware, but just beware. But go ahead, Heather.
Well, I would like before we play this, I do want to say that the music was composed by George Sanger, and he has
Fat Man.
Yeah, he's got a huge, huge library of video game scores, and a
legendary
lot of them.
Composer.
Yeah, he's a legendary composer. So my personal dislike of this soundtrack is not an indictment of the composer or the work he put into it. It's just not for me because I think the longer we're on this podcast, the more I realize I'm dumb and a jock when it comes to video games. So, Apodaca, would you play that music for us?
This is, making me ill.
It doesn't.
When does this play?
I don't know. Constantly? Through the whole fucking game?
It's the heart puzzle.
Oh, the heart puzzle. Okay.
This one's the heart puzzle.
Yeah.
It's like a demo is playing on a MIDI keyboard and somebody else is playing at the same time.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Especially in that context. So that's kind of an urgent sort of.
You know what
feel.
It reminds me of a little bit? It reminded me of the White Lotus theme, the music from the TV show.
Well, while we're talking audio here, I do want to bring in our engineer, Devin Bryant, who I believe was telling us, I think what he said, and he can characterize his own thoughts when we said we were going to talk about this game on an episode was, I love the seventh guest. So, mm-hmm. Devin, you have a history with this game?
Yeah, I mean, given that I haven't played it since 1994, that may be overselling it to say I love this game. It may be more accurate to say I have just
this
really good memories.
Devin's right. favorite game.
Yeah, my absolute favorite game. No, you know, this is around the era where, I mean, my video game era is really just like up until the TurboGrafx-16, honestly. And then I kind of jumped ship when I got a guitar and just became mm-hmm. obsessed with learning to play every instrument I could get my hands on. But this computer game thing was kind of like an extra little oasis of like, oh, you know, I enjoy the puzzle aspect, certainly. I love puzzles and I'm into that. I love the creepiness of it because I'm super into horror movies, etc. Really, though, I mean, Myst and Riven kind of kicked the Seventh Guest's ass. I don't think I ever finished the Fair. Seventh Guest. I think I got lost in the maze and I never actually completed it. Myst, on the other hand, we were obsessed with. Me and my two friends who I started my first band with, we were obsessed with beating Myst, and we would stay at our one friend's house who had it for like 4 or 5 days straight to try and beat that thing. And it was so satisfying to land a puzzle because there weren't
right.
walkthroughs and things that you could, you know, that you couldn't check with anybody, you know? So Myst was just, we just got to brute force this thing. We got to figure it out and you'd get burned out and you'd be like, okay, you're up, Chris. You got to come here. It's your turn. Try and figure this one out. Seventh Guest had a little bit of that, but I just like the creepy vibe. And to be honest with you, I really like the music.
Hell yeah.
Hey.
So if you like the music, I'm sure you liked the end credits music. Oh, wait, no, because you never finished it. But you should hear the end credits music.
I can't wait.
Because it is tonally inconsistent with the rest of the music in the game.
Wait.
Oh, yeah. Heather, this is going to be our first dance at our wedding.
This might be like the only thing I've liked of this so far.
Are you serious? This is actually the end credit music for this game?
Credits, yeah, that's the end credits music for this game.
It's a Stealth's theme.
Why?
I don't know. It is a little bit asynchronous with the rest of the game. I guess it probably the story does kind of end on a little bit of an up note. You know, it's but yeah, yeah, it is a little bit
note,
of a disconnect.
You
well,
die.
In the sense,
how
but,
does
but
it
in the
end?
Sense that
I don't know how it ends. I didn't get that far.
So basically what's happening in the story, and just to summarize other elements for people who haven't played it, it's like, you know, there's these, you basically are the seventh guest. There are six guests at this part, the six apparitions at this party, and you're seeing little vignettes as you go explore the mansion and solve puzzles of what happened with them. And they all usually, they all had some ironic wish, or they had some wish that was ironically fulfilled by Stauf. You know, so somewhere, a woman wants to be young again and she gets turned into a baby, that kind of shit.
That one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all this is happening. And there's also like a little boy there, like a lost little boy who's running around. Is his name Tab? It's not Tad.
Tad.
Okay.
Tad.
There's a little boy, Tad. Tad is running around. Spoiler alert. It turns out you, the player character, are Tad. You are like a grown up Tad, and you've been like kind of like trapped in this mansion.
Oh my god, it's about PTSD. This game went so much deeper than I even thought.
Yeah, because it kind of is. And so at the end, you finally because you've solved all the puzzles, you were able to overcome Stauf and free yourself from this prison.
But
whether that means the release of death or you get to live outside, I don't know.
You die. You go to hell. Well, it's true.
But then you hear that song.
48
Yeah, you made it 48 years. Yeah.
Playing the fucking game. Stauf's, to Mary's point about this being pedophilic at times, Stauf's tongue wraps around the body of the boy and drags him mm-hmm. towards the mouth of it would not pass muster today. Like, you wouldn't be able to sit in a room yeah. and be like, oh, I think the old man's tongue should go around the little boy. Like, nobody's going to allow that to happen.
That's after. So that happens in that this is during the ending. Yeah, he wraps his tongue around little boy. But before that, a woman who is delivering Tad to him is, one of these cursed people who Julia. Have been lured by his wishes. Julia, he barfs on her
yep.
and she melts.
Yes.
Who barfs so, like, on her? The boy barfs on
Stealth.
Her?
Stealth.
Stealth, like, pukes Stealth. Acid on her, and she dissolves pukes into acid it. On
her. Well, he yeah. doesn't need her anymore. Yeah.
I think.
No, right.
I think yeah. she also says something like, I've been tricked. Like, it's yeah. like.
She thought she was yeah, going to no get shit. The boy, too. She's like Epstein's, what was Epstein's roper?
Right.
Weiger knows her name Ghislaine. For sure.
There you Ghislaine, go. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. You kind of feel sorry for her in the end, don't you? No, I'm just kidding.
I do want to, yeah, I feel like, you know, we're going long here on this one. And I apologize, but I just like this is I do want to touch on something here. Regarding this game. So this was a huge hit, sold 2 million copies, Jesus grossed $50 million.
There's a lot of pedophiles out there.
huge game. So the developer, did you say it, Trilobite or Trilobite? I know trilobites are a thing. Or are they trilobites?
Trilobites?
Trilobites, trilobites are fossils. Well, the developer is called Trilobite. And so Trilobite has this huge hit. They release a sequel a couple of years later in 1995. The 11th Hour sells 1.7 million copies, also a hit. Then things kind of fall off for them. In 1996, they released the less heralded games Clandestiny and Uncle Henry's Playhouse. And so my quiz for the panel is, how many copies did Uncle Henry's Playhouse by the developer of The Seventh Guest sell in the United States?
Uncle Henry's Playhouse?
It was called Uncle Henry's Playhouse. It was more of a puzzle compilation than something with a cohesive narrative.
Devin's shaking
go with,
his head.
I'm gonna
He's
go
like,
with,
I didn't buy it. My hands are clean. I was never at Uncle Henry's Playhouse.
Don't know Uncle Henry. Don't know the Playhouse.
I'm going to go with 6,500.
Okay, 6,000. I got to write these down. 6,500 from Heather and Campbell.
The question's how many in like total?
How many copies did it sell in total in the United States? Their previous game sold 2 million and 1.7 million copies.
Yeah. What year was it released again? Sorry, I'm just collecting.
1996.
Yeah, I think it sold. I'm gonna go low. 500 copies.
500 copies.
I'm going to go high and say 10 million copies.
Mary comes closest, though. You all went over.
What?
27 copies sold in the U.S.
Oh, how devastating.
It's an extremely rare game these days because one bought the fucking thing.
Can
just
we play that
flop.
Next?
Oh my god. That's
even like
so
the creeps that
cute.
Probably like were into this were like, hey, I'm not touching Uncle Henry's Playhouse. Like, no yeah. shit.
It's a trap.
No, once they saw the tongue wrap around the boy, they were just like, this is even too much for me. You know? I would never do that to a child.
Anything else before we get to our final thoughts?
So we are now 2 weeks into, what is this, Scarytober? How did this get slayed? What
yes.
is this?
Yes.
Yeah, how did this get slayed?
October boot. October boot. I'm just going to keep workshopping it until it becomes the one. Do you hear, everyone, October boo.
I have yet to be scared in our scary month, and mostly I've been annoyed. And I just want to put that out there. I have limited time to play games, and people on the internet were complaining that we fell away from our roots on this show, and we've been playing games that we enjoy. Well, guess what? Joke's on me, because I'm fucking miserable.
Which, you know, you're not scared, but that is sort of a horror unto itself. You know,
yeah,
you're
depression.
Not enjoying yourself. Yeah, it's sort of like an ironic punishment, as it were.
Yeah.
You know? Right?
Yeah. No. If I was to design a hell for myself, that's speaking with incredible privilege, because I'm like, oh, I'd make it full of bad games. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, it'd be this, but two Knicks.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, I have nothing else to add.
Oh, I want to shout out. So the developers of this game, Graham Devine and Rob Landeros, the two leads who conceived this. Landeros later revives a lot of these re-releases and makes sure they live on. But Graham Devine has like a kind of amazing career. Goes to id after this, works on Quake.
Oh shit!
And then he's later he works for Ensemble and directs Halo Wars.
Wow!
So, you know, yeah, kind of a big springboard from the Seventh Guest to just working on these massive franchises.
I like Quake. I love Quake.
Quake 3 Arena specifically.
Yeah, I don't hate games. Just want to make that clear.
Well, we should get to our final thoughts on the Seventh Guest. It's time for our review crew.
Review crew.
Boo. So
yeah!
We'll say something positive about the Seventh Guest.
I knew I'd get you if I just drove it home enough.
I love it. We'll say something positive about the Seventh Guest and give it a numerical decimal rating. I actually finished this game, and I was, you know, I definitely cheated my way through a couple of the puzzles and the maze, which I'd advise you to do if you want, because some of them are very solvable. Some of them are inscrutable. A bunch of them are chess puzzles that were apparently lifted from a 19th century German textbook about chess. So they're like extremely challenging. They're, you know, not extremely challenging, but they're like, you know, higher level sort of things that take just like a ton of moves to figure out. So yeah, if you just want to see what this game was about, or you want to revisit it for nostalgic purposes, I would, you know, don't, especially for the maze, don't be afraid to use a walkthrough. But where I bailed on this game as a kid was the microscope puzzle. I don't know if anyone played the microscope. Apparently it's optional, but it's basically you're just playing like a tile game again. But at the time, in the original release, the AI was so fucking hard that there was like no way you could beat it. And I was reading, like, I was like reading Game Facts, and people were like saying like this AI is impossible. You just hit a brick wall right here, because it's just, you know, what is that game? It's basically Go. You're basically playing Go against the AI, but with like little microbes. And it looks cool, but it was just too fucking hard. I don't know if they nerfed the difficulty in a patch. I suspect they do. They did, or I just got super good at this somehow. But I beat this in two tries. So I was like, I can't. I guess my positive thing is like that was just, it's just such a satisfying feeling to finally get this monkey off my back and beat this game that overcame me as a child, and now I finally conquered as an adult. Also, the FMV ascent up that the main staircase, which is kind of a dazzling thing at the time. That specific sequence is a memorable gaming moment for me. I'd much rather play last week's game, A Nightmare on Elm Street, again than play this game. It is very janky, and a lot of it is very just impenetrable and tedious, but it's a historic game, and it's like Heather was saying, it's like the train coming at the screen, it's like the first talkie. This game had some consequence, and so I'm gonna give this a 7.0 for the Seventh Guest. Heather Ann Campbell.
All right, unlike Nick, I did not beat this game. In fact, once I finished the first puzzle, which was the cake puzzle, I said, I'm fucking done with this, and watch the rest. Watch the rest at a playthrough on YouTube. My favorite thing about the game, and my positive thing for Review Crew, is that the little boy, Tad, is inexplicably dressed like a milkman for no reason whatsoever. I hate this game. I hate this era of games that on CD-ROM. I hate Myst. I don't like this. I don't have the patience, and I certainly don't have the like. It's just the thing. Even at the time, I was like, so I loved Zork. Remember Zork? Zork is inscrutable puzzles, and you're playing it by typing, and you're using your brain. Like, it's not the puzzles that are the problem; it's the presentation. And for me, the presentation is a barricade to my enjoyment. Like, just I'm like, please stop, please stop. So
she couldn't beat any of the puzzles. She couldn't do it. She's really mad about it.
I once got locked in a refrigerator. That's not true. I was trying to heighten from like how dumb I would have to be. Let me try again. There's 20 letters of the alphabet. I know all 15 of them. How about that, guys? You ready?
Seem pretty dumb.
We're never going to find a game. Although I liked Phoenix Wright. Mm-hmm. I don't fucking know, man. There's something in games that I don't like, and this one hit all of them. All of the points. Mm. It's a 0.7 for me.
Wow.
Wow.
All right, Matt, what do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm on record. I also do not like games like this. And I especially don't like games this didn't age well in the way that it plays, like, at all. Like, just even with the issue that I was like, I had put like maybe at least 2 hours into it before it crashed.
Mm.
Or, you know, that I exited out of it. Then I had to do it again. And I was like dreading that as a possibility. I was just like, I fucking did this already. But I wanted to get it. I wanted to do a little more. I didn't beat it, but I got past where I had been already. And then I did a couple more things, but I don't know. I like to think I'm a pretty smart guy too, but games like this humble me. It make me realize I'm a fucking idiot. I don't know. Like, I'm hearing stuff about like audio clues right one through one ear and out the other. He could have been telling me how to solve it, and I would have been like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, dude.
Like, was it because he said it like this?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I was too afraid, actually. But this, if I had to say something positive, it's that I honestly really did enjoy the skeleton hand cursor, because it'll tell you, hey,
we didn't touch on that.
It's a skeleton hand. It's like it tells you where you can't click, which is helpful, because also the clicking area can be hard to parse. So when you're like right in it, it changes, and it's like you can come forward. It'll sort of gesture, I'm doing it, and I don't know how to describe this action.
There was a whole 5 minute period of my playtime today where I couldn't figure out how to get up the main stairway because the skeleton hand was there. There are sometimes like there's like halos of light where you can click, and sometimes there are halos of light that are on top of other halos of light, and so you have to know like click on the top part of the halo, and it just takes a while sometimes.
And it'll either be like, like that sort of gesture. You know, that's the only way I know how to describe it. Yes. Or like, come here sort of thing.
Or go over there.
Yeah. Or hey, check that out over there. Or hey, see that over there kind of stuff. Yeah. And so I thought that was at least helpful.
It is cool.
And then in the saving component is a Ouija board. And just to save myself time, I would always just write ass. as the right. as my letters. So I would remember, like, oh, it's this one. And it'll make me laugh when I would type
it. Yeah.
I'm going to give this, the further proof that I'm a stupid moron. adult, a numbskull, whatever you want to call it. But I'm gonna give this I'm gonna give it a 2, and I never want to think about it again.
Wow.
Great.
All right, so, Mary.
Matt and Heather were too dumb for the game. Nick and Devin liked it because it checked their nostalgia boxes and their potential pedophile boxes. And then I just like trying new things. So I was into it. Highlight for me is, I think in hindsight, is the maze. And I think it's because it was so hard and so frustrating. And it was the only puzzle I felt like I really enjoyed. Like, the puzzles are either like a little too simplistic and they're really, really easy to solve, or they're like far too fucking complicated. And the maze, while it is complicated and hard, it was the one that I was sort of like driven to beat. And when I finally did, I even though I did have to cheat, although cheating didn't even fucking help, because it was, I still got it wrong when I was like writing down all the steps that you're supposed to take, but it felt like a real victory in the way like that. I think, you know, you feel when you beat like a big boss on a video game or something. So the maze is definitely the boss of the game, in my opinion. I don't know. It brought me back to my community theater days. I'd give it a 3.75, and that's mostly just because I don't really want to play it again. But I did have a good time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty low score out of 10, but
out of a million. We
out of a million for
forever.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, these are all I'm those so scores sorry. Out of a million. No, my score stands 3.75 out of a million.
Well, hey, those were our thoughts on the seventh guest, but maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've culled from the internet, and if we had positive takes on the games, these will be negative reviews, and if we had a negative take on the game, these will be positive reviews. It's maybe we were wrong. And you know what? Maybe I was wrong. I've got a review here from April 1994's Computer Gaming World, which was talking about the games that you need to play on CD-ROM. And their opening game here is The Seventh Guest, consistently ranking high in our polls and a proven bestseller. The Seventh Guest is a CD-ROM showpiece and a title that has remained unchallenged in its 3D rendered beauty until the recent release of Myst on the Macintosh. Though classified as an adventure game, Seventh Guest is really an interactive puzzle-based drama, a game whose traditional brain teasers are woven together by the haunting story of the mysterious Henry Stauf. If you have a penchant for puzzles and want to see and hear some of the most exceptional computer graphics and music created to date, scare yourself up a copy of this game. Virgin Interactive Entertainment Incorporated for DOS, $99.99 retail value.
Oh, no.
People are paying $100 for Seventh Guest on CD-ROM.
I got this for 90% off.
I looked this up, but I had this issue. It's got Star Trek on the cover. I was a subscriber around this era, so I 100% probably read that at the time in 1994.
Wow.
Oh, that's sweet. That's a little baby Nick.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, not that young, but
yeah, you're in college, right?
I have one. This is on Steam. This is just a quick one that I have. This is by Joe T'Connor. This is a positive review. I played this game when it came out 27 years ago, and it's just as frustrating as before. Love this game.
I have this quick one as well, and it's from Amazon. It's from Ian McKnight, and they gave it 5 stars, and the title is Gifts for Grandpa. God is a gift from my father who played all the time when PCs first came about. Parentheses, I'm that old. So if you love puzzles, this is for you. And now they have a second chapter.
Wow.
This person,
that's...
I mean, I don't think PCs aren't that old.
I mean, they're as old as you.
Right? Well, I didn't have a PC when this game was released, which I think is probably why I didn't play it, because my brother and I were really into CD-ROM games. But yeah, we didn't have a way to play this one. So kind of old.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, if my dad's in his 70s now, and he was like a pretty computer enthusiast guy, had a Commodore 64, but that came out in the 80s. So, you know, if you were an adult into computers when they were first coming on the PCs, when they're first coming into homes, I think you probably could be pretty old right now.
Speaking of Commodore 64s, before I forget, I need to mention, I follow a retro technology TikToker, and I saw a Commodore 64 thing that I'd never seen, which is that they had a cassette tape deck.
Oh, yeah.
You put in a cassette and you press play and it would program the game on your Commodore 64. So you would wait hours and hours and hours and hours while the tape went from start to finish playing in silence, programming your Commodore 64, and then it would finally load and you could play the game.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that was in the day, you know, when you had 5 1/4 inch floppy disks. And so it was just another way of having more storage, was having actual like data tapes. Yeah, we had one of those.
I had never seen that. And I was like, I feel like I've seen a lot of retro tech stuff, and that would blew my mind.
This is me learning that it was weird.
I don't think it's weird. I just was, okay. Well, right. You know, take it however
I thought,
you want.
I thought it was like, everyone's got these in their homes, like toasters. Dad's computer tape deck. Hey, that was Maybe We're Wrong. It's time for the question block.
Ba-ding!
All right, this is from @JoeyMagidson on Twitter, and they write, do you think a successful horror movie could become a successful horror game? I know movies rarely, if ever, become good games, and games always struggle when adapted for film. But could it work? Always hold out hope for both ends of the equation will work. Thanks and love the pod. Thanks, Joey.
I'm trying to think of what, you know, the Alien games are. There've been some decent Alien games, you know, even going back to the arcade beat 'em up. But, you know, I haven't played Alien Isolation is the new one, right? The squad based shooter. I haven't played that yet.
No. That's Alien like Firestorm.
Alien Isolation
is the one where you're wandering around in a abandoned space station.
Mm-hmm. Not to bring up Texas Chainsaw Massacre again, but I bet that would make a really cool game because I have a feeling it would it could strike some of the same chords that PT did, which is probably the only game I've played that I thought was really, really scary, like actually scary. Like, I think part of what is so scary about the original, the Tobe Hooper Chainsaw Massacre, is the, like, I mean, like 25 minute section where she's basically just like running through cornfields and it feels like so visceral. And then there's, you know, it's mostly just her like running and screaming. And I bet it could like sort of pull on some of the same sort of, you know, horror chords that PT did.
Yeah, I think that's a good pitch. Although I'm just knowing video games, I feel like they just be like, you're Leatherface.
Right.
Like they just make you Leatherface and it's just a power fantasy. Yeah. Matt, yeah, anything come to mind? I know you like me are not someone who likes a scary game. We get too scared. But is there a horror franchise that could adapt well?
I feel like, I mean, just even in like any, I feel like, well, Paranormal Activity VR game would be the scariest thing ever. It'd be so scary. Wow.
I like that. There you go.
Yes, that is a good pitch.
If it doesn't exist already, it absolutely should. And then I for the other way, or I mean, I don't think the question was, hey, also the other way around. But something about the world of BioShock makes me think it would translate well to like a TV show.
Sure.
Maybe not necessarily a movie, but like a limited series. And I always think those games are scarier than everybody else, seems to. I think those games are like capital H horror to me. Those are so scary. But I'm also thinking like people, I don't know. There's like, I mean, The Shining, would The Shining be an interesting game? If The Shining could be like 12 minutes sort of thing, that might be a good version of,
well, hopefully not 12 minutes, but
The Shining might also be a really good, VR game. I think like thinking about VR horror games, like some of these films would translate so well because the experience of like, of actually being in a place and having to open doors, like to me, that's the scariest.
Yes.
And like physically putting yourself into like that, like, you know, Shining hotel or walking down those hallways, that seems really, really scary to me.
Horror is like a no brainer to me for VR because it's such it's such an immersive experience immediately, and that's like that's a home run.
Yeah,
I don't want to do it, but it sounds like it would work.
Yeah, no, that would kill me.
You guys should come over and do it sometime. It sounds like you both would like it a lot.
I'd love to.
You know, just come on over.
Yeah. You're saying this so we could put it on and you could kill us for real.
What?
Yeah. Boo. Then I'll...
No. Apodaca, the way VR works is if you die in the game, you die in real life.
Okay, I'll come over right now.
Great. Was the question... I feel like I misunderstood. Was the question what horror movie would make a good game or what horror game would make a good movie?
The former. Which horror, like, do you think a successful horror movie could become a successful horror game?
This does make me think of something else, not a movie, but they adapted Harlan Ellison's short story, I Have No Mouth and I Might Scream, but I Might Scream, but I Must Scream. Wait, I Have No Mouth, but I Must Scream. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I Must Scream. It's something like that.
I scream, no mouth. You scream, I have no mouth and ice cream.
Exactly. You get the principle. But that they adapted that as a point and click adventure game, and that worked really well because it was just so story based, and it also kind of had the like psychological terror. It really had, you know, hammered that home. And again, not a movie, but the Telltale Walking Dead series, which I probably talk about too much on here, but I thought that was really
wonderful.
That was really well executed. Great adaptation.
All right, I got it. Ready? Okay, here's how it goes. If I had money, time, and an indie development studio at my beck and call, I would make and release blank, unlabeled PlayStation 1 games and leave them at Goodwills. And it would be a Ring game that nobody had ever heard of.
Wow.
And if you were the kind of person who would like be a bargain bin person at Goodwill buying games for re-release on eBay or whatever, you'd get this game and you'd be like, what is this? And you drop it in your system and you start it up and it would be like the Ring tape, and then it would be a game, and you'd go on eBay and you'd be like, oh shit, how much is this worth? And there would be no record of it existing.
That's amazing.
And then no walkthroughs, no nothing. And you'd be like, wait, what is this fucking game? And that would be my horror adaptation of a movie.
Wow.
It's amazing. Wow. It'll never work now, though, because you've just spoiled it on the internet for everyone. So.
Well, that's what I do. That's what I do on the show. I come up with an idea that could have made me a lot of money, and I give it away to nothing.
Well, hey, send us your questions and send us your reviews of this week's game, The Seventh Guest. We will read some and play some on an upcoming episode of You Leave Us a Voicemail. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod, or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 616-2-PLAY. That is 616-275-2933. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And our guest has been Mary Laws Boo. Mary, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Always a delight to talk with you. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
I can do a semi-plug because all the information isn't released yet, but I'm working on a show on HBO called The Idol, starring pop sensation The Weeknd, and just announced today, Lily Rose Depp. And I think that's about all I can say about it, but stay tuned for The Idol, which will be... coming up at some TBD date.
Wow, look for that. And look for next week's game, which we're covering on Get Slayed. Matt, what is it?
Next week's game, Silent Hill 2. Go to hell, wow. Everyone.
Fuck yes! 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 Yes!
You're doing amazing!